Somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, One Eye opined. Somebody who is going to get killed if... It came directly toward us, now not more than 50 feet off the water. The ship had begun the long turn which would take her around the last headland to the open sea. I said, "Maybe it was sent to hit us, like a missile, to keep us from getting away." "No," One Eye said. "Carpets are too precious, too hard to create and maintain. And the ladies is the only one left. Destroy it, and even she would have to walk home." The carpet was down to 30 feet, swelling rapidly, sending an audible murmur ahead. It must have been traveling 150 miles an hour. Then it was on us, ripping through the rigging, brushing a mast, and spinning onto impact on the Sound, half a mile away. A gout of spray arose. The carpet skipped like a flat stone, hit again, bounced again, and smashed into the face of a cliff. The spell energies ruling the carpet degenerated in a violet flash. And not a word was spoken by any member of the company. For as that carpet had torn through the rigging, we had glimpsed the face of its rider. The captain. Who knows what he was doing? Trying to join us? Probably. I suspect he went to the wall planning to disable the carpet so it could not be used to pursue us. Maybe he planned to throw himself off the wall afterward to avoid being questioned later, and maybe he had seen the carpet in action often enough to have been tempted by the idea of using it himself. No matter. He had succeeded. The carpet would not be used to chase us. He would not be exposed to the eye. But he had failed his personal goal. He had died in the north. His flight and death distracted us while the ship moved down the channel till both Juniper and the North Ridge dropped behind the headland. The fire over the Black Castle continued, its terrible flames extinguishing the stars, but it shrank slowly. Oncoming dawn lessened its brilliance, and when one great shriek rolled across the world, announcing someone's defeat, we were unable to determine who had won. For us, the answer did not matter. We would be hunted by either the lady or her long-buried spouse. We reached the sea and turned south, with sailors still cursing as they replaced lines torn by the captain's passage. We of the company remained very silent, scattered about the deck, alone with our thoughts. And only then did I begin to worry for comrades left behind. We held a long service 2 days out. We mourned everyone left behind, but the captain especially. Every survivor took a moment to eulogize him. He had been head of the family, patriarch, father to us all. Chapter 40. Miadenville, Pathfinding. Fair weather and good winds carried us to Miadenville in good time. The ship's master was pleased. He had been well paid beforehand for his trouble, but was eager to shed a manifest of such vile temper. We had not been the best of passengers. One Eye was terrified of the sea, a grand victim of seasickness, and insisted everyone else be as scared and sick as he. He and Goblin never let up on one another, though the lieutenant threatened to throw the pair of them to the sharks. The lieutenant was in such a foul temper himself that they took him half seriously. In accordance with the captain's wishes, we elected the lieutenant our commander, and Candy to become second. That position should have fallen to Elmo. We did not call the lieutenant captain. That seemed silly with the outfit so diminished. There weren't enough of us left to make a good street gang. Last of the free companies of Catavar. 4 centuries of brotherhood and tradition reduced to this. A band on the run. It did not make sense. It did not seem right. The great deeds of our 4 brethren deserved better of their successors. The treasure chest was lost, but the annals themselves had somehow found their way aboard. I expect Silent brought them. For him, they were almost as important as for me. The night before we entered Miadenville Harbor, I read to the troops from the Book of Wogue, which chronicled the company's history after its defeat and near destruction in the fighting along the Baki in Norsely. Only 104 men survived that time, and the company had come back. They were not ready for it. The pain was too fresh. I gave it up halfway through. Fresh. Meadenville was refreshing. A real city, not a colorless burg like Juniper. We left the ship with little but our arms and what wealth we'd carried in Juniper. People watched us fearfully, and there was no little trepidation on our part, too, for we were not strong enough to make a show if the local prince took exception to our presence. The three wizards were our greatest asset. The lieutenant and Candy had hopes of using them to pull something that would provide the wherewithal to move on, aboard another ship, with further hopes of returning to lands we knew on the southern shore of the Sea of Torments. To do that, though, meant an eventual overland journey at least partly through lands belonging to the lady. I thought we would be wiser to move down the coast, confuse our trail, and hook on with someone out here, at least till the lady's armies closed in, as they would someday. The lady. I kept thinking of the lady. It was all too likely that her armies now owed allegiance to the Dominator. We located both Pawnbroker and Kingpin within hours of going ashore. Pawnbroker had arrived only 2 days before us, having faced unfavorable seas and winds during his journey. The lieutenant started on Kingpin immediately. "Where the hell you been, boy?" It was a sure thing Kingpin had turned his assignment into an extended vacation. He was that sort. "You were supposed to come back when—" "Couldn't, sir. We're witnesses in a murder case. Can't leave town till after the trial." "Murder case?" "Sure. Raven's dead. Pawn says you know that. Well, we fixed it so that bullet guy took the rap. Only we've got to hang around and get him hanged." "Where is he?" I asked. "In jail." The lieutenant reamed him good, cussing and fussing while passers-by nervously eyed the hard guys abusing each other in a variety of mystery tongues. I suggested, "We ought to get off the street. Keep a low profile. We got trouble enough without attracting attention. Lieutenant, if you don't mind, I'd like a chat with Kingpin. Maybe these other guys can show you places to hole up. King, come with me. You too." I indicated Silent, Goblin, and One-Eye. "Where are we going?" Kingpin asked. "You pick it. Someplace where we can talk, serious-like." "Right." He led the way, setting a brisk pace, wanting to put distance between himself and the lieutenant. "That really true, what happened up there? The captain dead and everything?" "Too damned true." He shook his head, awed by the idea of the company having been destroyed. Finally, he asked, "What do you want to know, Croker?" "Just everything you found out since you've been here, especially about Raven, but also about that guy Asa and the tavern keeper." "Shed? I saw him the other day. At least, I think I did. Didn't realize it was him till later. He was dressed different." "Yeah. Pawn told me he got away. The Asa guy, too. Him, I think I know where to find. The Shed guy, though. Well, if you really want him, you'll have to start looking where I thought I saw him."
"He see you?" That idea caught Kingpin by surprise. Apparently, it hadn't occurred to him to wonder. He isn't the brightest fellow sometimes.
"I don't think so."
We went into a tavern favored by foreign sailors. The customers were a polyglot lot and as ragged as we were. They spoke a dozen languages. We settled in at a table, used the language of the Jewel Cities. Kingpin did not speak it well, but understood it. I doubted that anyone else there could follow our discussion. "Raven," I said. "That's what I want to know about, Kingpin." He told us a story which matched Asa's closely, the edges being about as uneven as you would expect from someone who hadn't been an eyewitness.
"You still think he faked it?" One Eye asked.
"Yeah, it's half hunch, but I think he did. Maybe when we go look the place over, I'll change my mind. There a way you guys could tell if he's in town?" They put their heads together, returned a negative opinion. Not without we had something that belonged to him to start with, Goblin opined. We don't got that.
Kingpin, what about Darling? What about Raven's ship?
Huh?
What happened to Darling after Raven supposedly died? What happened to his ship?
I don't know about Darling. The ship is tied up down at its dock.
We exchanged glances around the table.
I said, that ship gets visited if we have to fight our way aboard.
Those papers I told you about.
Asa couldn't account for them. I want them to turn up. They're the only thing we got that can get the lady off our back.
If there is a lady, One Eye said,
won't be much pumpkin if the Dominator broke through.
Don't even think that.
For no sound reason, I had convinced myself that the lady had won. Mostly it was wishful thinking, I'm sure.
Kingpin, we're going to visit that ship tonight. What about Darling?
Like I said, I don't know.
You were supposed to look out for her.
Yeah, but she kind of vanished.
Vanished? How?
Not how, Croker, One Eye said in response to vigorous signing from Silent. How is irrelevant now.
When?
All right. When, Kingpin?
I don't know. Nobody's seen her since the night before Raven died.
Bingo, Goblin said in a soft, awed voice.
Damn your eyes, Croker. Your instincts were right.
What? Kingpin asked.
There's no way she would have disappeared beforehand unless she knew something was going to happen.
Kingpin, I said, did you go look at the place they were staying? Inside, I mean.
Yeah, somebody got there before me.
What?
The place was cleaned out. I asked the innkeeper. He said they didn't move out. They was paid up for another month.
That sounded to me like somebody knew about Raven getting croaked and decided to clean his place out. I figured it was that Asa. He disappeared right after.
What did you do then?
What?
Well, I figured you guys didn't want Bullock back in Juniper, so we got him charged with Raven's murder. There was plenty of witnesses besides us saw them fighting, enough to maybe convince a court we really saw what we said.
You do anything to trace Darling?
Kingpin had nothing to say. He stared at his hands. The rest of us exchanged irritated glances.
Goblin muttered, I told Elmo it was dumb to send him.
I guess it was. In minutes we had come up with several loose ends overlooked by Kingpin.
How come you're so damned worried about it anyway, Croker? Kingpin demanded. I mean, it all looks like a big so what to me.
Look, King, like it or not, when the Taken turned on us, we got pushed over to the other side. We're White Rose now, whether we want it or not. They're going to come after us. The only thing the Rebel has going is the White Rose, right?
If there is a White Rose.
There is. Darling is the White Rose.
Come on, Croker. She's a deaf-mute.
One Eye observed. She's also a magical null point.
Eh?
Magic won't work around her. We noticed that clean back at Charm. And if she follows true for her sort, the null will get stronger as she gets older. I recalled noting oddities about Darling during the Battle of Charm, but hadn't made anything of it then.
What are you talking about?
I told you, some people are negatives. Instead of having a talent for sorcery, they go the other way. It won't work around them. And when you think about it, that's the only way the White Rose makes sense. How could a deaf and dumb kid grow up to challenge the lady or dominate her on their own ground?
I'll bet the original White Rose didn't.
I didn't know. There had been nothing in the histories about her powers or their noteworthy absence.
This makes it more important to find her.
One Eye nodded.
Kingpin looked baffled. It was easy to fuddle King, I decided.
I explained. If magic won't work around her, we've got to find her and stay close. Then the Taken won't be able to hurt us.
One Eye said, Don't forget that they have whole armies they can send after us.
If they want us that bad... Oh, my.
What?
Elmo. If he didn't get killed, he knows enough to put the whole Empire on our trail. Maybe not so much for us as in hopes we'll lead them to Darling.
What are we going to do? Why are you looking at me? You're the one who seems to know what's going on, Croker. Okay, I guess. First we find out about Raven and Darling, especially Darling. And we ought to catch Shed and Asa again, in case they know something useful. We've got to move fast and get out of town before the Empire closes in, without upsetting the locals. We better have a sit-down with the lieutenant. Get everything on the table for everybody, then decide exactly what we'll do. Chapter 41. Miadenville. The Ship. Ours, apparently, was the last ship out of Juniper. We kept waiting for a later vessel to bring news. None came. The crew of our vessel did us no favor, either. They yammered all over town. We were buried by nosy locals, people concerned about relatives in Juniper, and the city government, concerned that a group of tough refugees might cause trouble. Candy and the lieutenant dealt with all that. The struggle for survival devolved on the rest of us. The three wizards, Otto, Kingpin, and Pawnbroker, and I, stole through the shadowed Miadenville waterfront district after midnight. There were strong police patrols to dodge. We evaded them with help from One Eye, Goblin, and Silent. Goblin was especially useful. He possessed a spell capable of putting men to sleep. "There she is," Kingpin whispered, indicating Raven's ship. Earlier I'd tried to find out how her docking fees were being paid. I'd had no luck. She was a fine, big ship, with a look of newness the darkness could not conceal. Only the normal lights burned aboard her, bow, stern masthead, port and starboard, and one at the head of the gangway, where a single bored sailor stood watch. "One Eye?" He shook his head. "Can't tell." I polled the others. Neither Silent nor Goblin detected anything remarkable, either. "Okay, Goblin, do your stuff. That'll be the acid test, won't it?" He nodded. If Darling was aboard, his spell would not affect the watch. Now that everyone had accepted my suspicions about Raven being alive, I'd begun to question them. I could see no sense in his not having slipped away by now, taking his very expensive ship somewhere far away, perhaps out to the islands. Those islands intrigued me. I thought we might grab a ship and head out there. Had to take someone who knew the way, though. The islands were a long way out, and there was no regular commerce. No way to get there by guesswork. "Okay," Goblin said. "He's out." The sailor on the quarterdeck had slumped onto a handy stool. He had his arms folded on the rail and his forehead on his arms. "No Darling," I said. "No Darling." "Anybody else around?" "No." "Let's go, then. Keep low. Move fast, all that." We crossed the pier and scampered up the gangway. The sailor stirred. Goblin touched him, and he went out like the dead. Goblin hustled forward, then aft, to the men on the rat guards. He returned, nodding. "Another 8 men below, all asleep. I'll put them under. You go ahead." We started with the biggest cabin, assuming it would be the owner's. It was. It sat in the stern, where the master's cabin usually is, and was split into sections. I found things in one indicating that it had been occupied by Darling. On Raven's side, we found soiled clothing discarded some time ago. There was enough dust to indicate that no one had visited the cabin for weeks. We did not find the papers I sought. We did find money, quite a substantial amount. It was cunningly hidden, but One Eye's sense for those things is infallible. Out came a chest brimming with silver. "I don't reckon Raven is going to need that if he's dead," One Eye said. "And if he ain't, well, tough. His old buddies are in need." The coins were odd. After studying them, I recognized what that oddness was. They were the same as the coins Shed had received at the Black Castle. "Sniff these things," I told One Eye. "They're Black Castle. See if there's anything wrong with them." "Nope. Good as gold," he chuckled. "Hmm. I hadn't any scruples about lifting the money. Raven had obtained it by foul means. That put it up for grabs. It had no provenance, as they say in Juniper. "Gather around here. I got an idea." I backed up to the stern lights where I could watch the dock through the glass window. They crowded in on me and the chest.
"What?" Goblin demanded.
"Why settle for the money? Why not take the whole damn ship? If Raven's dead, or even faking he's dead, what's he going to say about it? We could make it our headquarters." Goblin liked the idea, so One Eye didn't. The more so because ships had to do with water.
"What about the crew?" he asked. "What about the harbor master and his people? They'd get the law down on us."
"Maybe, but I think we can handle it. We move in and lock the crew up. There's nobody to complain." "Nobody complains. Why should the harbor master be interested?"
"The whole crew ain't aboard. Some's out on the town."
"We grab them when they come back." "Hell, man, what better way to be ready to move out in a hurry? And what better place to wait for Raven to turn up?" One Eye gave up objecting. He is essentially lazy. Two, there was a gleam in his eye which said he was thinking ahead of me.
"Better talk to the lieutenant," he said. "He knows ships."
Goblin knew One Eye well.
"Don't look at me if you're thinking about going pirate. I've had all the adventure I want. I want to go home."
They got into it, and got loud about it, and had to be shut up.
"Let's worry about getting through the next few days," I growled. "What we do later, we can worry about later. Look, we got clothes that belong to Darling and Raven. Can you guys find them now?"
They put their heads together. After some discussion, Goblin announced,
"Silent thinks he can. Trouble is, he has to do it like a dog. Lock on the trail and follow around everywhere Raven went. Right up till he died. Or didn't. If he didn't, right on to where he is now."
"But that..." "Hell. You're spotting him a couple months lead."
"People spend a lot of time not moving around, Croker. Silent would skip over that."
"Still sounds slow."
"Best you can get, unless he comes to us, which maybe he can't."
"All right, all right. What about the ship?"
"Ask the lieutenant. Let's see if we can find your damned papers."
There were no papers. One Eye was able to detect nothing hidden anywhere. If I wanted to trace the papers, I'd have to start with the crew. Someone had to help Raven take them off. We left the ship. Goblin and Pawnbroker found a good spot from which they could watch it. Silent and Otto took off on Raven's trail. The rest of us went back and wakened the lieutenant. He thought taking the ship was a good idea. He'd never liked Raven much. I think he was motivated by more than practical considerations.
Chapter 42. Meadenville, the refugee. The rumors and incredible stories swept through Meadenville rapidly. Shed heard about the ship from Juniper within hours of her arrival. He was stunned. The Black Company run out, crushed by their masters. That made no sense. What the hell was going on up there? His mother, Sal, his friends, what had become of them? If half the stories were true, Juniper was a desolation. The battle with the Black Castle had consumed the city. He wanted desperately to go find somebody, ask about his people. He fought the urge. He had to forget his homeland. Knowing that Croker and his bunch, the whole thing could be a trick to smoke him out. For a day he remained in hiding, in his rented room, debating, till he convinced himself that he should do nothing. If the company was on the run, it would be leaving again. Soon. Its former masters would be looking for it. Would the Taken come after him, too? No. They had no quarrel with him. They did not care about his crimes. Only the custodians wanted him. He wondered about Bullock rotting in prison, accused of Raven's murder. He did not understand that at all, but was too nervous to investigate. The answer was not significant in the equation of Marin Shed's survival. After his day in isolation, he decided to resume his quest for a place of business. He was looking for a partnership in a tavern, having decided to stick with what he knew. It had to be a better place, one that would not lead him into financial difficulties the way the Lily had. Each time he recalled the Lily, he suffered moments of homesickness and nostalgia, of bottomless loneliness. He had been a loner all his life, but never alone. This exile was filled with pain. He was walking a narrow, shadowed street, slogging uphill through mud left by a nighttime rain, when something in the corner of his eye sent chills to the deeps of his soul. He stopped and whirled so swiftly he knocked another pedestrian down. As he helped the man rise, apologizing profusely, he glared into the shadows of an alley. "Conscience playing tricks on me, I guess," he murmured, after parting with his victim. But he knew better. He had seen it, had heard his name called softly. He went to the mouth of the gap between buildings, but it had not waited for him. A block later, he laughed nervously, trying to convince himself it had been a trick of imagination after all. What the hell would the castle creatures be doing in Miadenville? They'd been wiped out. But the company guys who had fled here didn't know that for sure, did they? They had run off before the fight was over. They just hoped their bosses had won, because the other side was even worse than theirs. He was being silly. How could the creature have gotten here? No ship's master would sell passage to a thing like that. "Shed, you're wearing yourself silly about nothing." He entered a tavern called the Ruby Glass, operated by a man named Selkirk. Shed's landlord had recommended both. Their discussions were fruitful. Shed agreed to return the following afternoon. Shed was sharing a beer with his prospective partner. His proposition seemed beneficial, for Selkirk had satisfied himself as to his character and now was trying to sell him on the Ruby Glass.
"Night business will pick up once the scare is over."
"Scare?"
"Yeah, some people have disappeared around the neighborhood. 5 or 6 in the last week. After dark. Not the kind usually grabbed by the press gangs, so people have been staying inside. We aren't getting the usual night traffic."
The temperature seemed to drop 40 degrees. Shed sat rigid as a board, eyes vacant, the old fear sliding through him like the passage of snakes. His fingers rose to the shape of the amulet hidden beneath his shirt.
"Hey, Marin, what's the matter?"
"That's how it started in Juniper," he said, unaware that he was speaking. "Only it was just the dead. But they wanted them living, if they could get them. I have to go."
"Shed, what the hell is wrong?"
He came out of it momentarily.
"Oh, sorry, Selkirk. Yeah, we have a deal. But there's something I have to do first. Something I need to check on."
"What?"
"Nothing to do with you, with us. We're ready to go. I'll bring my stuff up tomorrow and we can get together with the people we need to close the deal legally. I just have something else to do right now."
He went out of the place practically running, not sure what he could do or where he could start, not even if he was sane in his assumption. But he was sure that what had happened in Juniper would reoccur in Miadenville, and a lot faster if the creatures were doing their own collecting. He touched his amulet again, wondering how much protection it afforded. Was it puissant, or just a promise? He hurried to his rooming house, where people were patient with his questions, knowing he was from out of town. He asked about Raven. The murder had been the talk of the town, what with a foreign policeman having been charged on the accusation of his own men. But nobody knew anything. There was no eyewitness to Raven's death except Asa, and Asa was in Juniper, probably dead. The Black Company would not have wanted him turning witness against them. He shed an impulse to contact the survivors. They might want him out of the way, too. He was on his own with this. The place where Raven had died seemed a likely place to start. Who knew where that was? Asa.
Asa was not available. Who else? How about Bullock? His guts knotted. Bullock represented everything he feared back home. In a cage here, but still very much a symbol. Could he face the man? Would the man tell him anything? Finding Bullock was no problem. The main prison did not move. Finding the courage to face him, even from beyond bars, was another matter. But this entire city lay under a shadow. Torment racked Shed. Guilt cut him apart. He had done things that left him unable to endure himself. He had committed crimes for which there was no way of making restitution. Yet here was something. "You're a fool, Maron Shed," he told himself. "Don't worry about it. Meadenville can look out for itself. Just move on to another city." But something deeper than cowardice told him he could not run, and not just from himself. A creature from the Black Castle had appeared in Meadenville. Two men who had had dealings with the castle had come here. That could not be coincidence. Suppose he moved on. What was to keep the creatures from turning up again, wherever he went? He had made a deal with a devil. On a gut level, he sensed that the net in which he had been taken had to be unwoven, strand by strand. He moved the everyday, cowardly Shed to a throne far behind his eyes and brought forward the Shed who had hunted with Crag and eventually killed his tormentor. He did not recall the cock-and-bull story he used to get past the wards, but did bullshit his way in to see Bullock. The Inquisitor had lost none of his spirit. He came to the bars spitting and cursing and promising Shed an excruciating death. Shed countered, "You ain't never gonna punish nobody but maybe a cockroach in there. Shut up and listen. Forget who you were and remember where you are. I'm the only hope you got of getting out." Shed was amazed. Could he have been half as firm without the intervening bars? Bullock's face went blank. "Go ahead. Talk." "I don't know how much you hear in here. Probably nothing. I'll run it down. After you left Juniper, the rest of the Black Company showed up. They took over. Their lady and whatnot came to town. They attacked the Black Castle. I don't know how that turned out. What word there is makes it sound like the city was wiped out. During the fighting, some of the company guys grabbed a ship and got out on account of their masters were going to turn on them. Why, I don't know." Bullock stared at him, considering. "That's the truth, from what I've heard secondhand. It was those Black Company bastards got me in here, framed me. I only had a fight with Raven. Hell, he almost killed me." "He's dead now," Shed described what Asa had seen. "I have a notion what killed him and why. What I need to know is where it happened, so I can make sure. You tell me that, and I'll try to get you out." "I only know approximately. I know where I caught up with him and which way him and Asa went when they got away. That should pin it down pretty close. Why do you want to know?" "I think the castle creatures planted something on Raven. Like a seed. I think that's why he died. Like the man who brought the original seed to Juniper." Bullock frowned. "Yeah, sounds tall. But listen to this. The other day I saw one of the creatures near where I'm staying. Watching me. Wait. I know what they look like. I met him. Also, people are disappearing. Not too many yet. Not enough to cause a big stink, but enough to scare people." Bullock moved to the back of his cell, settled on the floor, placed his back against the wall. He was quiet for more than a minute. Shed waited nervously. "What's your interest, innkeeper?" "Repayment of a debt. Bullock, the Black Company kept me prisoner for a while. I learned a lot about that castle. It was nastier than anybody guessed. It was a doorway of sorts, through which a creature called the Dominator was trying to get into the world. I contributed to the growth of that thing. I helped it reach the point where it attracted the Black Company and its sorcerer friends. If Juniper has been destroyed, it's as much my fault as anybody's. Now the same fate threatens Meadenville. I can do something to stop it, if I can find it.
Bullock sniggered. Sniggers turned into chuckles. Chuckles became laughter.
"Then rot here!" Shed shouted and started to leave.
"Wait!" Shed turned. Bullock stifled his mirth.
"Sorry. It's so incongruous. You, so righteous. I mean, I really believe you mean it."
"All right, Marin Shed. Give it a shot. And if you manage it and get me out of here, I might not drag you back to Juniper."
"There's no Juniper to drag me to, Bullock. Rumor says the lady planned to loot the catacombs after she finished the Black Castle. You know what that means. All-out rebellion."
Bullock's humor vanished. Straight down the Shaker Road, past the 12th mile marker. Left on the first farm track, under a dead oak tree. You go at least 6 miles on that. Way past the farms. That's wild country. You better go armed.
Armed. Shed grinned a big, self-conscious grin.
Marin Shed never had guts enough to learn to use a weapon.
Thanks.
Don't forget me, Shed. My trial comes up first week next month.
Right.
Shed dismounted and began leading the rented mule when he reached a point he estimated to be 6 miles from the Shaker Road. He went on another half mile. The track was little more than a game trail, winding through rugged country densely covered with hardwood. He saw no evidence man ever traveled this way. Odd. What had Raven and Asa been doing out here? He could think of no reason that made sense. Asa had claimed they were running from Bullock. If so, why hadn't they kept on going down the Shaker Road? His nerves tautened. He touched the amulet, the knife hidden up his sleeve. He had splurged and bought himself 2 good short weapons, one for his belt and one for his sleeve. They did little to boost his confidence. The trail turned downhill, toward a brook, ran beside that for several hundred yards, and debouched into a broad clearing. Shed almost walked into that. He was a city boy. Never before had he been into country more wild than the enclosure. Some innate sense of caution stopped him at the clearing's edge. He dropped to one knee, parted the undergrowth, cursed softly when the mule nudged him with its nose. He had guessed right. A great black lump stood out there. It was the size of a house already. Shed stared at faces frozen in screams of terror and agony. A perfect place for it, out here. Growing this fast, it would become complete before anyone discovered it, unless by accident, and the accidental discoverer would become one with it. Shed's heart hammered. He wanted nothing more than to race back to Miadenville and cry the city's danger in the streets. He had seen enough. He knew what he had come to learn. Time to get away. He went forward, slowly. He dropped the mule's reins, but it followed, interested in the tall grass. Shed approached the black lump carefully, a few steps at a time. Nothing happened. He circled it. The shape of the thing became more evident. It would be identical to the fortress overlooking Juniper, except for the way its foundations conformed to the earth. Its gate would face south. A well-beaten path led to a low hole there, further confirmation of his suspicions. Where had the creatures come from? Did they roam the world at will, hidden on the edge of night, seen only by those who bargained with them? Returning to the side from which he had approached, he stumbled over something. Bones. Human bones. A skeleton. Head, arms, legs, with part of the chest missing. Still clad in tatters, he'd seen Raven wear 100 times. He knelt. "Raven, I hated you, but I loved you, too. You were the worst villain I ever knew, and as good a friend as I ever had. You made me start thinking like a man." Tears filled his eyes. He searched childhood memories, finally found the prayer for the passage of the dead. He began to sing in a voice that had no notion how to carry a tune. The grass swished only once, just on the edge of audibility. A hand closed on his shoulder. A voice said, "Marin Shed."
Shed shrieked and grabbed for his belt knife. Chapter 43 Miadenville, Warm Trail. I did not have a good night after visiting Raven's ship. It was a night of dreams, of nightmares, if you will, of terrors I dared not mention when I wakened, for the others had troubles and fears enough. She came to me in my sleep, as she had not done since our grim retreats when the rebel was closing in on Charm so long ago. She came, a golden glow that might have been no dream at all, for it seemed to be there in the room I shared with five other men, illuminating them and the room, while I lay with heart hammering, staring in disbelief. The others did not respond, and later I was not sure I had not imagined the whole thing. It had been that way with the visits in the way back when.
"Why did you abandon me, physician? Did I treat you less than well?"
Baffled, confused, I croaked out. "It was run or be killed. We would not have fled had there been a choice. We served you faithfully, through hazards and horrors greater than any in our company's history. We marched to the ends of the earth for you, without complaint. And when we came to the city Juniper, and spent half our strength storming the Black Castle, we learned that we were to be rewarded by being destroyed." That marvelous face formed in the golden cloud, that marvelous face drawn in sadness.
"Whisper planned that, Whisper and Feather, for reasons of their own. But Feather is gone, and Whisper has been disciplined. I would not have allowed such a crime in any case. You were my chosen instruments. I would permit no machination of the Taken to harm you. Come back."
"It's too late. Lady, the die is cast. Too many good men have been lost. Our heart is gone. We have grown old. Our only desire is to return to the south, to rest in the warm sun and forget."
"Come back. There is much to be done. You are my chosen instruments. I will reward you as no soldiers have ever been rewarded."
I could detect no hint of treachery. But what did that mean? She was ancient. She had deluded her husband, who was far harder to fuddle than I. "It's too late, lady."
"Come back, physician. You, if no one else. I need your pen."
I do not know why I said what I did next. It was not the wisest thing to do, if she was feeling the least benevolent toward us, the least disinclined to come howling after us. "We will do one more thing for you, because we are old and tired and want to be done with war. We will not stand against you if you do not stand against us." Sadness radiated from the glow.
"I am sorry. Truly sorry. You were one of my favorites. A mayfly who intrigued me."
"No, physician, that cannot be. You cannot remain neutral. You never could. You must stand with me or against me. There is no middle ground." And with that, the golden cloud faded, and I fell into a deep sleep, if ever I had been awake. I woke feeling rested but worried, at first unable to recall the visit. Then it slammed back into consciousness. I dressed hurriedly, raced to the lieutenant. "Lieutenant, we gotta start moving faster. She won. She's going to come after us." He looked startled. I told him about the night vision. He took it with a pound of salt till I told him that she had done the same thing before. During the long retreat and series of encounters that had brought the rebel main forces to the gates of Charm. He did not want to believe me, but he dared not do otherwise. "Get out there and find that Asa, then," he said. "Candy, we move on that ship tonight. Croker, you pass the word. We're pulling out in 4 days, whether you guys find Raven or not." I sputtered a protest. The critical thing now was to find Darling. Darling was our hope. I asked, "Why 4 days?" "It took us 4 days to sail here from Juniper. Good winds and seas all the way. If the lady left when you turned her down, she couldn't get here any quicker. So I'll give you that long. Then we hit the sea, if we have to fight our way out.
All right. I didn't like it, but he was the man who made the decisions. We had elected him to do that.
Hagop, find Kingpin. We're going looking for Asa.
Hagop hurried away like his tail was aflame. He brought Kingpin back in minutes, King crabbing because he hadn't yet eaten, hadn't yet gotten his 8 hours of sleep.
Shut up, King. Our ass is in a vice, I explained, though it wasn't necessary.
Grab something cold and eat on the run. We've got to find Asa.
Hagop, Kingpin, One Eye, and I hit the street. As always, we drew a lot of attention from morning marketers, not only because we had come from Juniper, but because One Eye was an oddity. They'd never seen a black man in Miadenville. Most people hadn't heard of blacks.
Kingpin led us a mile through twisting streets.
I figure he'll hole up in the same area as before. He knows it. He's not very bright either, so it wouldn't occur to him to move because you guys came to town. Probably just plans to keep his head down till we pull out. He's got to figure we have to keep moving.
His reasoning seemed sound, and so it proved. He interviewed a few people he had met in the course of previous poking around, quickly discovered that Asa was, indeed, hiding out in the area. Nobody was sure where, though.
"We'll take care of that in a hurry," One Eye said.
He parked himself on a doorstep and performed a few cheap magic tricks that were all flash and show. That arrested the attention of the nearest urchins. Miadenville's streets are choked with children all the time.
"Let's fade," I told the others. We had to be intimidating to small eyes. We moved up the street and let One Eye draw his crowd. He gave the kids their money's worth, of course, and 15 minutes later he rejoined us, trailed by an entourage of street mites.
"Got it," he said. "My little buddies will show us where."
He amazes me sometimes. I would have bet he hated kids. I mean, when he mentions them at all, which is about once a year, it is in the context of whether they are tastier roasted or boiled. Asa was holed up in a tenement typical of slums the world over. A real rat and fire trap. I guess having come into money hadn't changed his habits. Unlike old Shed, who had gone crazy when he had money to spend. There was but one way out, the way we went in. The children followed us. I did not like that, but what could I do? We pushed into the room Asa called home. He was lying on a pallet in a corner. Another man, reeking of wine, lay nearby in a pool of vomit. Asa was curled into a ball, snoring.
"Time to get up, sweetheart," I shook him gently.
He stiffened under my hand. His eyes popped open. Terror filled them. I pressed down as he tried to jump up.
"Caught you again," I said.
He gobbled air. No words came out.
"Take it easy, Asa. Nobody's going to get hurt. We just want you to show us where Raven went down."
I withdrew my hand. He rolled over slowly, watched us like a cat cornered by dogs.
"You guys are always saying you just want something."
"Be nice, Asa. We don't want to play rough, but we will if we have to. We have 4 days before the lady gets here. We're going to find Darling before then. You're going to help.
What you do afterward is your own business." One Eye snorted softly. He had visions of Asa with a cut throat. He figured the little man deserved no better.
"You just go down the Shaker Road. Turn left on the first farm road past the 12th milestone. Keep heading east till you get to the place. It's about 7 miles. The road turns into a trail. Don't worry about that. Just keep going and you'll get there."
He closed his eyes, rolled over, and pretended to snore. I indicated Hagop and Kingpin. "Get him up."
"Hey," Asa yelped. "I told you. What more do you want?"
"I want you to come along, just in case."
"In case what?"
"In case you're lying and I want to lay hands on you fast." One Eye added,
"We don't believe Raven died."
"I saw him.
You saw something, I countered. I don't think it was Raven. Let's go. We grabbed his arms. I told Hagop to see about rounding up horses and provisions. I sent Kingpin to tell the lieutenant we wouldn't be back till tomorrow. Hagop, I gave a fistful of silver from Raven's chest. Asa's eyes widened slightly. He recognized the mintage, if not the immediate source.
"You guys can't push me around here," he said. "You're not anything more than I am. We go out in the street, all I have to do is yell and—"
"And you'll wish you hadn't," One Eye said. He did something with his hands. A soft violet glow webbed his fingers, coalesced into something serpent-like that slithered over and under his digits. "This little fellow here can crawl into your ear and eat out your eyes from behind. You can't yell loud enough or fast enough to keep me from sicking him on you." Asa gulped and became amenable. "All I want is for you to show me the place," I said. "Quickly, I don't have much time." Asa surrendered. He expected the worst of us, of course. He had spent too much time in the company of villains nastier than us. Hagop had the horses within half an hour. It took Kingpin another half hour to rejoin us. Being Kingpin, he dawdled, and when he appeared, One Eye gave him such a look, he blanched and half drew his sword. "Let's get moving," I growled. I did not like the way the company was turning upon itself, like a wounded animal snapping at its own flank. I set a stiff pace, hoping to keep everybody too tired and busy to fuss. Asa's directions proved sound and were easily followed. I was pleased, and when he saw that, he asked permission to turn back. "How come you're so anxious to stay away from this place? What's out there that's got you scared?" It took a little pressure, with One Eye conjuring his violet snake again to loosen Asa's jaw.
"I came out here right after I got back from Juniper, because you guys didn't believe me about Raven. I thought maybe you were right, and he'd fooled me somehow. So I wanted to see how he maybe did it, and—"
"And?" He checked us over, estimating our mood.
"There's another of those places out there. It wasn't there when he died, but it is now."
"Places?" I asked. "What kind of places?"
"Like the Black Castle? There's one right where he died, out in the middle of the clearing."
"Tricky," One Eye snarled. "Trying to send us into that. I'm going to cut this guy, Croker." "No, you're not. You let him be." Over the next mile, I questioned Asa closely. He told me nothing more of importance. Hagop was riding point, being a superb scout. He threw up a hand. I joined him. He indicated droppings in the trail.
"We're following somebody, not far behind."
He swung down, poked the droppings with a stick, duck-walked up the trail away.
"He was riding something big, mule or plow horse."
"Asa."
"Eh?"
The little man squeaked. "What's up ahead? Where is this guy headed?"
"Nothing's up there, that I know of. Maybe it's a hunter. They sell a lot of game in the markets."
"Maybe." "Sure," One Eye said, sarcastic, playing with his violet snake. "How about you put a little silence on the situation, One Eye?"
"No, I mean so nobody can hear us coming."
"Asa, how far to go?"
"Couple miles, anyway. Why don't you guys let me head back now? I can still get to town before dark."
"Nope. You go where we go." I glanced at One Eye. He was doing as I had requested. We would be able to hear one another talk. That was all. "Saddle up, Hagop. He's only one guy."
"But which guy, eh, Croker? Suppose it's one of them creepy things. I mean, if that place in Juniper had a whole battalion that came out of nowhere, why shouldn't this place have some?"
Asa made sounds that indicated he had been having similar thoughts, which explained why he was anxious to get back to town. "You see anything when you were there, Asa?"
"No, but I seen where the grass was trampled like something was coming and going."
"You pay attention when we get there, One Eye. I don't want no surprises." 20 minutes later, Asa told me,
"Almost there. Maybe 200 yards up the creek. Can I stay here?"
"Quit asking stupid questions.
I glanced at Hagop, who pointed out tracks. Somebody was ahead of us still.
Dismount, and stow the chatter. Finger talk from here on in. You, Asa, don't open your mouth for nothing. Understand?
We dismounted, drew our weapons, went forward under cover of One Eye's spell. Hagop and I reached the clearing first. I grinned, waved One Eye forward, pointed. He grinned, too. I waited a couple of minutes for the right time, then strode out, stepped up behind the man, and grabbed his shoulder. Maron Shed. He shrieked and tried to pull a knife, tried to run at the same time. Kingpin and Hagop headed him off and herded him back. By that time, I was kneeling where he had knelt, examining the scatter of bones.
Chapter 44 Miadenville, the Clearing.
I looked up at Shed. He looked resigned. Caught up faster than you expected, eh? He babbled. I could make little sense of what he said because he was talking about several things at once. Raven, black castle creatures, his chance to make a new life, whatnot.
Calm down and be quiet, Shed. We're on your side.
I explained the situation, telling him we had 4 days to find Darling. He found it difficult to believe that the girl who had worked in the Iron Lily could be the rebel's White Rose. I did not argue, just presented the facts.
4 days, Shed. Then the lady and Taken could be here. And I guarantee you she'll be looking for you, too. By now they know we faked your death. By now they've probably questioned enough people to have an idea what was going on.
We're fighting for our lives, Shed. I looked at the big black lump and said to no one in particular, and that thing don't help one damned bit. I looked at the bones again.
Hagop, see what you can make of this. One Eye, you and Asa go over exactly what he saw that day. Walk through it. Kingpin, you play Raven for them. Shed, come here with me.
I was pleased. Both Asa and Shed did as they were told. Shed, though shaken by our return to the stage of his life, did not seem likely to panic. I watched him as Hagop examined the ground inch by inch. Shed seemed to have grown, to have found something in himself that had not had a chance in the sterile soil of Juniper. He whispered,
"Look, Croker, I don't know about that stuff about the lady coming and how you got to find Darling. I don't much care,"
he indicated the black lump.
"What are you going to do about that?"
Good question. He did not have to explain what it meant. It meant the Dominator had not endured final defeat in Juniper. He had hedged his bet beforehand. He had another gateway growing here and growing fast. Asa was right to be afraid of castle creatures. The Dominator knew he had to hurry, though I doubted he had expected to be found out so soon.
There isn't much we can do when you get down to it.
You gotta do something. Look, I know. I dealt with those things. What they did to me and Raven and Juniper. Hell, Croker, you can't let that happen again here.
I didn't say I didn't want to do something. I said I can't. You don't ask a man with a penknife to chop down a forest and build a city. He doesn't have the tools.
Who does?
The lady.
Then I have my limits, friend. I'm not going to get myself killed for Miadenville. I'm not going to get my outfit scrubbed for people I don't know. Maybe we owe a moral debt, but I don't think it's that big.
He grunted, understanding without accepting. I was surprised. Without his having said as much, I sensed that he had launched a crusade. A grand villain trying to buy redemption. I did not begrudge him in the least, but he could do it without the company and me.
I watched One Eye and Asa walk Kingpin through everything Raven had done the day he died. From where I sat, I could see no flaw in Asa's story. I hoped One Eye had a better view. He, if anyone, could find the angle. He was as good at stage magic as at true wizardry. I recalled that Raven had been pretty good with tricks. his biggie had been making knives appear out of thin air. But he had had other tricks with which he had entertained Darling. Hagop said,
"Look here, Croaker."
I looked. I did not see anything abnormal.
"What?"
"Going through the grass, toward the lump. It's almost gone now, but it's there, like a trail." He held blades of grass parted. It took me a while to see it. Just the faintest hint of a sheen, like an old snail track. A closer scrutiny showed that it should have started roughly where the corpse's heart would have lain. It took a little work to figure, because scavengers had torn the remains. I examined a fleshless hand. Rings remained on the fingers. Various metal accoutrements and several knives also lay around. One Eye worked Kingpin over to the bones. "Well?" I asked. "It's possible. With a little misdirection and stage magic, I couldn't tell you how he did it, if he did." "We got a body," I said, indicating the bones.
"That's him," Asa insisted. "Look, he's still wearing his rings, and that's his belt buckle and sword and knives."
But a shadow of doubt lingered in his voice. He was coming around to my way, and I still wondered why the nice new ship had not been claimed. "Hagop, hunt around for signs somebody went off in another direction. Asa, you said you lit out as soon as you saw what was happening."
"Yeah?"
"So, let's quit worrying about that and try to figure what happened here. Just to look at it, this dead man had something that became that." I indicated the lump. I was surprised I had so little trouble ignoring it. I guess you can get used to anything. I'd paraded around the big one in Juniper till I'd lost that cold dread that had moved me for a while. I mean, if men can get used to slaughterhouses or my business, soldier or surgeon, they can get used to anything. "Asa, you hung around with Raven. Shed, he lived at your place for a couple years, and you were his partner. What did he bring from Juniper that could have come to life and become that?" They shook their heads and stared at the bones. I told them, "Think harder. Shed, it had to be something he had when you knew him. He stopped going up the hill a long time before he headed south." A minute or two passed. Hagop had begun working his way along the edge of the clearing. I had little hope he would find traces this long after the fact. I was no woodsman, but I knew Raven. Asa suddenly gasped.
"What?"
I snapped.
"Everything is here. You know, all the metal. Even his buttons and stuff. But one thing."
"Well?"
"This necklace he wore. I only seen it a couple times. What's the matter, Shed?"
I turned. Shed was gripping his chest over his heart. His face was marble white. He gobbled for words that would not come. He started trying to rip his shirt. I thought he was having an attack. But as I reached him to help, he opened his shirt and grabbed something he was wearing around his neck. Something on a chain. He tried to get it off by main force. The chain would not break. I forced him to take it off over his head, pried it out of stiff fingers, held it out to Asa. Asa looked a little pale.
"Yeah, that's it."
"Silver," One Eye said, and looked at Hagop meaningfully. He would think that way. And he might be right. "Hagop, come here." One Eye took the thing, held it to the light. "Some craftsmanship," he mused. Then flung it down and dived like a frog off his lily pad. As he arced through the air, he barked like a jackal. Light flashed. I whirled. Two castle creatures stood at the side of the black lump, frozen in mid-step, in the act of rushing us. Shed cursed. Asa shrieked. Kingpin zipped past me and drove his blade deep into a chest. I did the same, so rattled I did not recall the difficulty I'd had during our previous encounter. We both hit the same one. We both yanked our weapons free.
"The neck,"
I gasped. "Go for the vein in the neck." One Eye was up again, ready for action. He told me later he had glimpsed motion in the corner of his eye. Jumped just in time to evade something thrown. They had known who to take first, who was most potent. Hagop came up from behind as the thing started moving, added his blade to the contest. As did Shed, to my surprise. He jumped in with a knife about a foot long, got low, went for a hamstring. It was brief. One Eye had given us the moment we needed. They were stubborn about it, but they died. The last to go looked up at Shed, smiled, and said,
"Maron Shed, you will be remembered."
Shed started shaking. Asa said,
"He knew you, Shed."
"He's the one I delivered bodies to, every time but one." "Wait a minute," I countered. "Only one creature got away at Juniper. Don't seem likely it would be the one who knew you." I stopped. I had noticed something disturbing. The two creatures were identical, even to a scar across the chest when I peeled back their dark clothing. The creature the lieutenant and I had hauled down the hill after having slain it before the castle gate had had such a scar. While everyone else was suffering post-combat shakes, One Eye asked Hagop, "You see anything silver around old bones? When you were checking first?" One Eye held up Shed's necklace. "It might have looked something like this. It was what killed him." Hagop gulped and dug into a pocket. He handed over a necklace identical to Shed's, except that the serpents had no eyes. "Yeah," One Eye said, and again held Shed's necklace to the light. "Yeah, the eyes it was, when the time was right. Time and place." I was more interested in what else might come out of the black lump. I pulled Hagop around the side, found the entrance. It looked like the entrance to a mud hut. I suppose it wouldn't become a real gate till the place grew up. I indicated the tracks. "What do they tell you?"
"They tell me it's busy and we ought to get out of here. There's more of them."
"Yeah." We rejoined the others. One Eye was wrapping Shed's necklace in a piece of cloth. "We get back to town, I'm sealing this in something made of steel and sinking it in the harbor." "Destroy it, One Eye. Evil always finds its way back. The Dominator is a perfect example." "Yeah, all right, if I can." Elmo's rush into the Black Castle came to mind while I was getting everybody organized to get out of there. I had changed my mind about overnighting. We could get most of the way back before nightfall. Meadenville, like Juniper, had neither walls nor gates. We would not be locked outside. I let Elmo lie in the back of my mind till the thought ripened. When it did, I was aghast. A tree ensures reproduction by shedding a million seeds. One certainly will survive, and a new tree will grow. I pictured a horde of fighters bursting into the guts of the Black Castle and finding silver amulets everywhere. I pictured them filling their pockets. Had to be. That place was doomed. The Dominator would have known that even before the lady. My respect for the old devil rose. Crafty bastard. It was not till we were back on the Shaker Road that I thought to ask Hagop if he had seen any evidence that anyone had left the clearing by another route.
"Nope," he said, "but that don't mean anything."
"Let's not spend so much time yakking," One Eye said. "Shed, can't you make that damned mule go any faster?" He was scared, and if he was, I was more so.
Chapter 45. Meadenville, Hot Trail. We made the city, but I swear I could sense something sniffing along our back trail before we reached the safety of the lights. We returned to our lodgings only to find most of the men gone. Where were they? Off to take over Raven's ship, I learned. I had forgotten about that. Yes, Raven's ship. And Silent was on Raven's trail. Where was he now? Damn. Sooner or later, Raven would lead him to the clearing. A way to find out if Raven had left it, for sure. Also a way to lose Silent. One Eye, can you get hold of Silent? He looked at me strangely. He was tired and wanted to sleep. Look,
If he follows Raven's every move, he's going to head out to that clearing. One Eye groaned and went through several dramatic shows of disgust. Then he dug into his magic sack for something that looked like a desiccated finger. He took it to a corner and communed with it, then returned to say, "I got a line on him. I'll find him." "Thanks."
"Yeah, you bastard. I ought to make you come with me."
I settled by the fire with a big beer and lost myself in thought. After a while, I told Shed, "We have to go back out there."
"Eh?"
"With Silent."
"Who's Silent?"
"Another guy from the company. Wizard, like One Eye and Goblin. He's on Raven's trail, tracing every move he made from the minute he arrived. He figured he could track him down, or at least tell from his movements.